I like the way that scripture reading ends. And he became more and more powerful because what? The Lord Almighty was with him. Because the Lord Almighty was with him. If God has promised or had promised you something, how many years would you be willing to wait to receive it? 1 year? 2 years? How about 5 or 10 years? David waited 13 years. He was anointed by Samuel, and through that time he was being chased by Saul and Saul's army. We've read about that the last couple of weeks. And now we find here David is in the midst of a civil war. Saul has passed away, fell on his own sword. He was in the middle of a battle against the Philistines. The battle, he was losing the battle. He was wounded, and he fell on his own sword. His sons died there with him too. Jonathan was one of them. Suddenly now there's a big vacuum. They hadn't decided who was going to take the place of Saul. And so we have confusion, anarchy, chaos, a total mess. Not quite the way David thought it would all turn out. He figured at some point there would be this nice, smooth transition and he would become the king of Israel. How long would you wait? Well, I'm not somebody that likes to wait for anything, to be honest with you. If you want to drive me nuts, just put me in a line or make me sit in some L.A. traffic for hours. It should only take 20 minutes to 30 minutes to get somewhere, and it ends up taking 4 hours. That happened to me a couple of weeks ago on the way home, just before we got into Paris, Lake Paris area on the freeway. All of a sudden, everything went to a screeching halt. It would have only taken me probably another 25, 30 minutes to get home. Instead, it took me almost 4 hours. There was a big accident. A tour bus had an accident on the freeway, and we ended up literally in a parking lot for several hours, just sitting on the freeway. And finally, they detoured us through town. I don't like to wait in lines, do you? I don't like to wait for anything. When I arrived in the United States as a young boy of 16 years old, the very first thing I wanted, I'll bet you can't guess, a driver's license. Can you relate to that? I wanted a driver's license. I wanted my independence. I wanted my freedom. I needed to be able to get up and go when I wanted to go. I needed the driver's license. Now, the funny thing is I've been driving for 6 years already. I've been driving Jeeps, trucks, motorcycles, big front loaders, all kinds of stuff that we use to build churches in the jungles of Borneo. So I was a good driver. Never had an accident. Accident, well, I did hit a water buffalo one time. That wasn't very nice. Actually, you feel sorry for the water buffalo, really. The Jeep was seriously damaged. I actually had to get out, get a winch, and I had to pull the bumper back off of the tire. The fender was all smashed down into the tire. The buffalo kind of limped off and no big deal. But I knew how to drive. I was confident in my driving. I had a good driving record, but I didn't have a license. And here I was in America, and I had to have a license. Not only did I have to have a license, but I had to go through driver's training. Sissy, driver's training. Give me a break. I could teach those guys how to drive. I had driven through some horrendous roads, mud and muck and rivers and all kinds of jungle trails, and I even made my own roads out through the jungles. If I had to get somewhere, put it in four-wheel drive and just go on ahead. But now I was told that I had to wait 6 weeks and I had to take a 2-week driver's class. What a joke. So finally I passed the class in flying colors. Went down to the DMV, went in, took the driving test, no sweat. Took the written test, failed. Oh, rats. How could that be? How could I fail? I was such a good driver. How could they fail me? So I had to wait a few weeks more. You know how it is. Go back down, take the test again. Back in those days, you couldn't just take another one right away. I had to wait. Worst part of it was my girlfriend passed everything. And the other two friends that I went through driving class with me, they all passed with flying colors. I was feeling pretty bad. I didn't want to wait. David was the man who did not want to wait. He was always on the go. He was always going here and going there. He was a man who had a plan for everything in his life, and he was willing to see it through. He was willing to do whatever he needed to do to get to his destination. He wasn't someone who let obstacles get in the way of his life. Bears, lions, giants, armies, didn't matter. David was a man who got the job done. God saw great potential in David, and he anointed him. Samuel went and anointed David as the little shepherd boy there, as the future king of Israel. And after much running and hiding, and much warfare, much killing, much political confusion, David is finally, in 2 Samuel chapter 2, he is finally anointed the king of Judea. Oh boy. Good old Judea. They all came around. They said, hey, we need a king. Saul's gone, so we'll just anoint you. On the other hand, David now needed to wait. He waited and waited. And while he waited there in that waiting room of life, many things were happening around him. You know, isn't it wonderful that the record and the writings of David's life give us such a wonderful expression of what struggling with faith is all about. He's so real and so down to earth and so full of passion. But you know, by nature, the practice of faith often leaves you in the waiting room of life. Huh? You found that out? Have you learned that? Look at, if you will, to Psalms chapter 40. If we can find some expression in the writings of David himself here in Psalms chapter 40. I wrote down, actually there are so many different psalms that I could have picked. I just kind of went through and just picked one that I felt really expressed David's feelings. Here in Psalms chapter 40 he said, I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit. Don't you love the way David says things? He lifted me out of this slimy pit. What kind of a pit was he in? I don't know. But he was in a slimy pit. And out of the mud and out of the mire, he set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth and a hymn of praise to our God. Do you get the feeling of what's going on in David's life? He's down in this slimy pit. He needs four-wheel drive to get out. But that won't even get him out. It's the hand of the Lord that lifts him up out of the pit. And what is his response? Praising God, worshiping God. I love that, don't you? I love that kind of response. But that's so typical of David. Psalms chapter 27 verse 14, it says, wait for the Lord. There's that word, wait for the Lord. Psalms 130 verse 5 says, my soul waits for the Lord. My soul waits for the Lord. This is not just a physical waiting. This is not just an intellectual waiting. This is a heart, body, and soul waiting upon the Lord. Here David was so worn out, so torn apart, so confused. Here he was in the waiting room. And he's asking God to revive him, revive his soul. He is weary to the bone. His bones cry out. He wants a change in his life. God has him waiting. God has us waiting sometimes because it's only in the waiting room that we learn to follow His plan. It's only in the waiting room that we learn to listen to His voice. It's often in the waiting room that we learn to trust in His words. We learn not to run ahead or to fall behind, but we learn to just wait. You know, that's something that I find that I have to learn. And as I'm getting older, I'm learning it better. I don't know if that has anything to do with my age or if it just has to do with wisdom or maturing, but I've had to learn that God is in no hurry. We have a world that is rushing and dashing and scurrying and running here and there. And the Bible says, at the end of time, men will run to and fro. This generation is running to and fro more than any other previous generation. We can run all over the world on Facebook if we want. Now, we can tweet people in China, or tweet, or whatever they call it, Twitter. We can talk to anybody we want to by just simply picking up our cell phone. We can travel hundreds and thousands of miles through the air just simply by using our phones and our computers. David is waiting. Abner, who is Saul's general, little nepotism there, though, because actually Abner was his cousin. And he was a faithful general of Saul's, fought by his side. Decides to take things into his own hands, and he immediately takes Ishbosheth, it's hard to get your mouth around that one, Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and he puts him on the throne. He says, I'm going to make you king. There's a lot of confusion here. David doesn't seem to be stepping up to the plate with his army to do battle. So guess what? I'm just going to take things into my own hands. I have a plan. I now pronounce you king of Israel. And David's looking there going, okay, God, what was the plan here now? Wasn't I anointed back there years and years ago? But David stays faithful. In fact, he is so faithful to God that he mourns the death of Saul, the very man who sought to kill him. He mourns the death. In fact, the man who claimed to kill Saul, who brought the crown of Saul and the armband of Saul to David to say, here, take this. It's your kingdom. You can be king, David. He had him put to death because he had killed Saul. He claimed to have killed Saul. Not sure that story was accurate there. I think he took credit for something he really didn't do, as we know. David was so saddened by the death of Saul that he wept. He wrote a mournful song about the death of Saul and Jonathan. And David mourned the death of Saul. And amazingly enough, David had become so humble, and he was here in this waiting room of life. He was such a humble man that he even accepted the fact that Ishbosheth would be the king of that portion of Israel. All around David are men seeking to control, seeking and vying for power and position. And David is sitting there waiting upon the Lord. Abner sets, as I said, Ishbosheth up on the kingdom. He becomes upset at Ishbosheth, and he says, fine, you know what? I'm leaving you, and I'm going over to the other side. I'm going to go join David. So Abner leaves this poor guy up. He's got him on the throne now, and Abner takes his whole army and marches over to David. Now, this is interesting. You know, this kind of sounds like something that, you know, you would read in a book or like a movie or something. This guy actually becomes a traitor. And he goes over to David's side, and he says to David, listen, David, I got a shortcut for you. Doesn't need to be a lot of bloodshedding. Doesn't be a lot of warfare. Why don't I just bring my army over to your side and make you king? You hear that? Why don't I just make you king, David? I failed with Ishbosheth, but I'll make you king, because you know you're a lot brighter than Ishbosheth. And you have the hearts of the people, so you and I, we can make a real good deal here. It's interesting. Satan always has his counterfeit. Satan always has his sideline, his option, his plan, that he's more than willing to short-circuit God's plan in your life. You ever found that out to be true? Satan always has another plan, and he's more than willing to plant that concept and that idea in your mind. God has a plan for your life. He has a future for you. You are in the waiting room of life, and along comes the devil and says, "Listen, I got a shortcut for you. Jesus, if you will just bow down to me, I will give you the whole world for free. You can turn the stones to bread. If you cast yourself off of this high mountain, the angels will carry you up, will pick you up." You see, even Satan had a shortcut for Jesus. Satan has a shortcut for you in your life. God has a plan. Are you willing to wait upon the Lord to fulfill that plan? David was willing. He had learned. And so he waited. The kingdom of Saul began to collapse all around him. Joab, David's bodyguard and general, hears about this little maneuver that Abner tried to pull off, and he becomes very angry, very upset. He sees through the plan. He sees what Abner is trying to do. Abner actually had in mind to become the king himself, because he went and took all of Saul's concubines as his wives. That was a move to become king. So he was going to try to sort of weasel his way in and become and set himself up. And Joab saw through that. And he had a grudge with Abner, because Abner had killed his brother. And so he went after him. And the scriptures tell us that Joab and Abner went at it, and Abner lost. And he was killed. In this story also, we find that two men took it upon their own hands to kill Ishbosheth. They assassinated Ishbosheth, and they came to David and they said, "Hey, we got the guy. Here, look, we killed him." And you know what David's response was? "Put these guys to death. They had no business meddling with God's plan. They had no business taking things into their own hands and doing it their own way." David was determined that if he was going to become king of Israel, it was only going to be by the hand of God. Do you see this? He was willing to wait upon the Lord. In fact, if you look at 2 Samuel chapters 2, 12 through chapter 3, 11, David is amazingly out of the picture. He's not part of the battles. He's not part of the fighting that goes on, the civil war within Israel. David is silently waiting. He's waiting for the hand of God to move. Joab, as I said, has a battle with Abner, and Abner is killed. Waiting on the Lord. History is full of people who waited upon the Lord. David was not an opportunist. He was not one who would stoop to do anything just to get what he thought he needed or deserved or wanted. He was determined that he would only become king. As I said before, he would only become king by the hand of God and the will of God. And so we have some lessons that we can learn from this story in chapter 5. We can learn from David's experience in our own lives. Those of you that are in the waiting room of life, all of us are, let's face it. All of us are waiting for something. There's something in your life. There's something in your life that you want. There's something that you're waiting for. There's something that you long for. We all have that. So here are some principles that we can learn from David about waiting, what I call waiting room etiquette. Waiting room etiquette. First of all, number one, God has all the time in the world. You got that? God is not in a hurry. He has all the time in the world. Really let that sink in, because it will change your thinking about a lot of things and how you interact with God. He's got all the time in the world. He's not rushing around like you are. Another thing you need to learn while you're in the waiting room, and that's called trouble. That's called trouble. Troubles may come and troubles may go, but God is always there. Okay? Troubles come and troubles go in our lives, but God is always there. I had a phone call, somebody I haven't heard from in probably 10 years. Got a phone call the other day, but actually yesterday. I've been praying for this person for probably 30 years. This person has been resisting the leading of God in their life in every way they could imagine. They have been miserable. They have been up and down. They have been in every imaginable way emotionally troubled for 30 years. I got this phone call and I talked to this individual for 3 hours about the gospel. The conversation began, "Pastor, what do you think about 2012? Some of you are going, "Oh, what's 2012? It's all over, folks. It's all over the news. It's all over the media. There are movies being made about it. It's in the news. What about 2012? Is there anything in the writings of Ellen White that talks about 2012? What does the Bible say about 2012? And I just let them talk. Yak, 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 yak. And then I said, "What difference does it make? Who really cares about 2012 or 2020 or 2030 or 1844? Or the list goes on. Time does not mean anything in the waiting room of life. God is in control. That is important." And then I had the chance to share, once again, I repeated myself as I had in the past, I shared the good news of the gospel and the freedom that brings and the peace that brings. Who cares about 2012? Who really gives a rip? If you have a relationship with Jesus Christ, you are saved. You are saved now. You are saved tomorrow. You are saved 10 years from now. Whenever God decides to come and take His children home, you are saved. The question is, are you willing to wait patiently in the waiting room and not get caught up with the devil's dogs? That was something HMS Richards, some of you may not know HMS Richards, he was a great evangelist, radio evangelist for many years in the Adventist Christian Church. And one day he sat down with a bunch of us young guys. We were, I was only been in the ministry probably 2 years. And he got together with a bunch of us young guys. And we were talking to him and asking him lots of questions. He was a wise old man. And he said, "You know, boys," after he was done talking to us, he says, "I just want to leave you with one thought. Just one thought." He said, "It may not make any sense to you right now," but he says, "someday it will make sense." He says, "When you're a pastor, and when you are sharing the good news of salvation, don't get caught up in chasing the devil's dogs." I thought, what? Don't chase the devil's dogs? Let me tell you, my friends, I have seen the devil's dogs many, many, many times in my ministry. And they are people like Abner who want to come along and lead you off on a dog chase somewhere else. They have another plan. They have a shortcut. They have something better than what's happening now. They want to take you away from the focus that you have on following the Word of God and His plan. I'm tempted to name time periods in the past 30 years where I've seen the devil's dogs. Anybody remember John Todd running around with tapes talking about the Illuminati back in the 1970s? Does anybody remember a Wayne Bent? Does anybody remember a David Koresh? Does anybody remember? The devil's dogs are everywhere. They're in the church trying to lead us away from God's plan. They were everywhere in David's kingdom. Everybody had a plan for David. But David was in the waiting room. He would not be moved. He wanted the hand of God to lead his life. Do you want the hand of God to lead in your life? Remember this. God is bigger than time, and he's certainly not limited by time. He's in no hurry. Abraham waited 25 years for his promised son. Jacob waited 14 years for his wife. Some of you are going, yeah, I waited longer than that maybe. Joseph waited and died hoping to enter the promised land. And 400 some years later, they took his bones to the promised land. Israel waited 430 years in Egypt to get into the promised land. Saints have waited for 2,000 plus years for the coming of Jesus Christ. So, waiting is part of God's divine plan for you. What do you think of that? Get used to it. Get used to it. Because, you know, I found that it's in the waiting. It's in the waiting that we often become discouraged, isn't it? When we have to wait for something, we go, ah, man, it's never going to happen. Never going to find the right person. I'm never going to be able to fulfill my dreams. I'm never going to get the job I want. The Lord's, yeah, he's not going to come. 2,000 years, he hasn't shown up. It's going to be a long time, way down the line. Waiting is often a place where we meet our greatest foe. And do you know who that is? It's called self. If you've ever been in a position in your life where you have been waiting for something, it's usually our own gears up here that get turning. You know, we say, the devil this, the devil that. Yeah, the devil's got his dogs. But more often than not, it's our own selves that get us into a mess. Trying to figure it all out. Trying to get it all right. Trying to make plan A, B, and C. When those fail, then we start all over again. Take comfort. Take comfort, my friends, when you are in the waiting room of life, because you are in good company. If you turn to Hebrews chapter 11, which I have been drawing the names of God's faithful from as we've gone through this series. Hebrews chapter 11. And I want to read verse 13. Hebrews 11. Verse 13 and verse 16. Now listen to this. All of these people, there's a list of people, went through all the way from Abel all the way down through to David. And it's by faith Abraham, by faith Isaac, by faith Jacob, by faith Joseph, by faith Samuel, by faith David. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. Looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for all men. You're in good company if you're in the waiting room. Chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. Hebrews chapter 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded, can you see it? You are surrounded. If these walls could be blown out, you would see a multitude of thousands upon thousands, maybe millions upon millions of people. You are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on ourselves in the mirror. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith. Whew! Wait a minute. I thought this faith thing was somehow me working hard, somehow me learning how to do it just right. Get it all figured out intellectually. Get it all figured out theologically. Make sure I listen to the right tapes. Make sure I watch the right television programs with the right speaker on. You know, I won't mention any names. Sorry, guys. Wrong. Jesus is the author. And He is the perfecter of your faith. So you thought you owed it all, huh? You thought you owned it all. The one thing that you thought you could hang on to was your faith. The one thing that you thought you were in control of, that you could just work harder, that you could just somehow do all the right things. You could just be more faithful than the day before. Well, guess what? Jesus is the author and the perfecter of your own faith. Changes the game, doesn't it? Stay focused on the game plan, folks. Stay focused on the game plan. The second thing we have to learn is waiting on the Lord is designed. I'm going to speed up here. Waiting on the Lord is designed to stretch your faith. You don't want your faith stretched? Then don't go in the waiting room. Run around across the face of the earth, to and fro. But if you want your faith strengthened and stretched, you're going to find that that's what happens in the waiting room. The waiting room is also a time to enhance. Now listen to this. This is very important. The waiting time is a time to enhance your intimacy with Jesus Christ. When I think about waiting, I think about 30-some years ago when I waited up front in the church for my beautiful bride to come down the aisle. That was the longest 5 minutes that I've ever had in my whole life. It seemed like hours waiting. You know, I wasn't allowed to see her beforehand, so my imagination was going, wow, you know, going crazy, you know. Imagine what she must look like. I was shaking, I was sweating, you know, I had to sing to her also. So I was really sweating it. And then she spoke before she entered the door in the back. She read a poem to me. And I was really pumped and excited. The doors opened and there she was. Just absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely stunning and unbelievable. Far beyond my active imagination. Way beyond that. Here was this beautiful bride dressed in white, with this radiant smile on her face, coming down the aisle. She was going to be my wife. Let me tell you something, folks. That 5 minute wait was worth it all. I would have waited 5 years. I waited 1 year. I would have waited 5 years. I would have waited 10 years. I would have waited as long as I needed to wait to make Carol my bride. That was worth it all. Embrace the waiting time. We're in it together. And we're all waiting. The fourth thing you need to know is you need to rest assured that God will make the wait well worth it. If you're in a hurry this morning, you can go to McDonald's and you can get a Happy Meal. But if you want to be a part of the wedding feast of the Lamb, Do you hear me? If you want to take part in that huge wedding feast of the Lamb in heaven, and you want to sit around with all those people like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Rahab and Mary and all those people, those great men and women of God, if you want to be part of that, you are going to have to wait. Mm-hmm. And God will make it worth it. It'll be worth it.